Hey, Startup Hustle listeners, before we get into today's episode, I've got some exciting news to share. If you've enjoyed the insights and stories here at Startup Hustle, you're going to love what we have in store at our brand new podcast called Product Driven. I've always described myself as a product guy first, entrepreneur, software engineer, but really a product guy. I love building products. Many people struggle, though, with how to take a product idea and build a tech product, while software engineers struggle to understand the business side of things and they just don't see the big picture. My new podcast, Product Driven, is about that gap between business and the tech side of building software. It's designed for startup founders, tech leaders, software engineers, and anyone who loves tech and startups. Thank you for being part of this community. Enjoy this episode of Startup Hustle, and please subscribe to Product Driven in your podcast app, and you can also check it out on YouTube. Thank you so much.
And we're back for another episode of Startup Hustle, a podcast for entrepreneurs by entrepreneurs. If you want to start, own, or build a business, then you're in the right place. We bring you the real truth about what it's like to take something from concept to launch. From growth, innovation, experience, failing, or winning big, we've got you covered. So let's get down to business with another episode of Startup Hustle, brought to you by Fullscale.io. And we're back for another episode of Startup Hustle. Matt DeCourcy here with Matt Watson. Hi, Matt.
How's it going, man?
Oh, I'm just, you know, I'm sitting here, I'm just painting away, just trying to make some art.
You and me both, man. I'm trying to take my kids' art and sell it online. I think I'm going to be a billionaire.
But so I created this small painting, and I've been shoving it into my computer, but it doesn't seem to want to upload. Any kind of support you can give me on that?
Use your scanner to scan it.
I hadn't thought about that.
Maybe I should take old family photos and scan them too. I could sell them online.
I don't know if that classifies as art.
It's art to me.
If you call it art, I think it's art.
Yeah, now, I think it's art, man.
Now, that's what we're going to talk about today. We're going to talk about the NFT art scenes, part two of our series about NFTs. And, you know, we just, if you want to start at the beginning, go to our episode titled WTF is an NFT, where we gave a lot of background with that. And before we get into all of the interesting and amazing things going on in the world of NFT art, today's episode of Startup Hustle is brought to you by Canva, where you go to collaborate and create amazing graphic design for free. Whether it's a presentation to share an idea, a video to launch your business, or a social post to start a conversation, with Canva, you can design anything. Discover the magic of visual communication and how Canva helps you create a lasting impact today. Go to canva.com. There's a link in the show notes for that. Canva is a really great tool. I use it all the time to create a ton of stuff, man. Everything from social media posts. I actually created the presentation for Canva to sponsor Startup Hustle using Canva. So anyway, that was art.
It is the reason you're the best graphic artist I know.
Yeah, I know, but you don't know that many, so I'm not going to get too excited about that. So, all right, so we talk about NFTs, and, you know, I don't want to get too deep into the mechanics of what that is, non-fungible tokens. Like I said at the beginning of the show, if you want a more technical background about what an NFT actually is, I don't want to get too deep in the weeds for that. But, you know, something I didn't realize until seeing the notes here, do you realize that the first actual digital art was created in the 60s?
I mean, yeah, I guess as soon as computers existed, it would have made sense.
Yeah. So, you know, now, I mean, we're in the middle of this, of what is probably going to be looked back at as a gold rush of NFT ownership. So non-fungible tokens. And this really started in the spring. Fired off and got moving in the spring of 2021, when an artist named Beeple sold a piece called Every Days. It's the first 5,000 days. And that sold for $69.3 million and really put the spotlight on digital art. And, you know, since then you've seen the rise of a lot of very interesting projects that are more than just art, right? So meaning like, It's not just buying an image. It's not just buying the digital rights and ownership to, you know, to actual paintings or art or something like that. It's actually a lot of these things have, a lot of NFTs have tangible, quote, stuff attached to them. They have metaverse implications. Some of them even turned into, like, Bored Ape Yacht Club recently turned into ApeCoin and a lot of stuff like that. But, you know, today we're going to be more specific into the actual art space. So, you know, you look at, I mean, some of this stuff's selling for a hell of a lot of money, Matt.
It's crazy. I mean, the ones that everybody's heard of are going to be the Bored Apes. The very first, you know, big collection that really came out was CryptoPunks. So that's kind of one of the original ones too. And some of the other ones that are common today are like Azuki and like a few different ones or whatever that are super popular. But most people have heard of Bored Apes. That seems to be the one that gets all the kind of media attention lately. The old school people that have been around crypto for a while all know about CryptoPunks because that was really kind of the original deal. But, you know, you've gotten into this a lot over the last few months as we started talking about doing this series. And I still haven't jumped into it. I haven't bought one.
Now,
a Bored Ape and I'm using it as my avatar on Twitter. So prove or don't prove that I own one because my avatar on Twitter is one. But
One of the ways I can prove that you don't own it on Twitter is it's Twitter actually lets you connect an NFT to your profile picture and then they're in a different shape. So if you go to, yeah, if you want to go check out my Twitter profile at DeCourcy Matt, and you will see my grandpa ape or whatever I choose to put up at the time, because I've bought several of these. But Matt, let me go ahead and give you a little bit of let me tell you a little bit of what I learned and what I've seen when it comes to NFT art. Now, a lot of the stuff that, quote, started as NFT art, like CryptoPunks or Bored Apes, is beginning to evolve into other things.
Like, right? Other brands. I mean,
it's not just an image.
Yeah.
But some of the other stuff that I've run into now, look, we're going to do a different episode about NFT music, because music is still art, but we're going to talk more specifically about like image-based stuff. Right? Like things like you would hang on a wall. Now, here's a fact that I bet almost nobody knows that listens to this show, even if you heard all 800 plus episodes, is I actually have a pretty sizable art collection. You can, you guys can't see you this do. Listening, but here in my home studio, I've got quite a bit of original art, mainly from a guy I went to high school with who's a world-class painter. So I have a real appreciation for that. And along the way, I learned a lot about art, mainly that, there's exclusivity around it, but it's all driven by hype. It really is. It's like, who painted it? So I've got these really nice paintings on the wall behind me that realistically are worth $4,000 or $5,000 a piece in a gallery, which for paintings is still good, but there's a shitload of paintings out there that certainly aren't worth that much. Now, if Nate Trotter, and you can go to natetrotter.com if you want to see more of his stuff, but if Nate was Beeple, these would be, I wouldn't even feel comfortable hanging them on my wall because they'd be so valuable. Mm-hmm. So it's about who painted it, who created it, what brand they disseminated from, or like the exclusivity of some of it.
Digital art's the same way.
Yeah. So like with Bored Ape, they mint these things. So in that case, so I've seen that things that are created through like digital generation. What does that mean, Matt? That means like you take a baseline of something and you just put different layers, different effects. And some of these things, so here's the thing, is some of them will have hundreds of different combinations, which means that when you generate them in association with other things, so some of them will be more rare. Some of the properties might only show up in 1% of the things. So in some cases, if you get three really rare things on one image, that might make that image the most exclusive out of 10,000.
Well, okay, to provide a little more clarity for those who are listening, maybe aren't following us. So the way that this usually works is, this is kind of the most common way that a lot of NFTs are done right now. So they'll release like 10,000 of them, right? It'll be like a picture of an ape or whatever, but there'll be an ape with like wearing different hats or different color backgrounds or wearing different shirts or whatever, right? Like it's
smoking,
that's what
a blunt, not smoking, yeah, a blunt, eyes wide, like open, eyes shut, eyes, yeah, are red, wearing a purple jacket, have, yeah, green fur, have blue fur, purple fur, you name it, fur.
And that's like for the Bored Ape, there was one that everybody kind of thought looked like Eminem, like resembled Eminem, yep, or something. And they finally convinced Eminem to buy it. So now Eminem owns that one.
Now that evolved out of just image-based stuff though, because that turned into other things, and those actual images gave birth to other images. So holders of these NFT tokens, or it would be like if one of these paintings that's on the wall behind me, if I just woke up and I came in here one day and there were two paintings below it, and I was like, wow, where'd these come from? And then some voice from wherever was like, those are your airdropped art pieces, Matt. You know, so that's one thing the art on the wall won't do behind me, but some of this has begun to duplicate, and there's some reasons for that. So now when it comes, so here's some of the things that I've seen when it comes to art. So I've seen, there's one called, it's about Vans, like shoes. So it's called it's like Follow My Vans. Let's see if I can find that real quick. Where My Vans Go. And this is some artist. So there's only 188 total images that this guy's taken, but they're all from these crazy places. Like imagine being on the ledge at the Empire State Building and you're taking a picture straight down of New York. And then this guy's got his shoes in it. So the minimum price that you're going to buy one of those for, and it's created by Drifter Shoots, is 52 Ethereum. Matt, that's what, about at the time of this recording, about 150 grand. Yeah.
That's crazy, man.
Yeah. Yeah. So these are all one of a kind, and that's a famous photographer.
I mean, most of them are just pictures of like a skyline or buildings or whatever with the dude's legs in the picture.
He's famous. It's so Ansel Adams, who's probably the first truly famous photographer. Some of the, you know, some of the plates that were used for his original images are worth millions because of the exclusivity and the rarity of them. So I've seen that. You have actual like images that are of like hand painted art, which would be like taking the paintings that are on the wall behind me.
Yes.
You digitize them in some of these cases, you might not see variants. They might just say, so in the art world, you typically, it follows a progression. You'll have an original painting, which is one of one, and then they create prints that are based on different size, quality, and sometimes numbered and signed by the artist.
Yeah.
And they just have this hierarchy that goes down, and so in theory, this an image or a painting that might be worth 20 grand as the original might actually be worth 250 grand to the artist. Because A, people can't always acquire the original one. They don't want to pay 20 grand for it. They don't feel it's worth it. So they buy prints and other things. So with NFT art, some of the other stuff I ran into is, I mean, I've seen everything from pictures. Some of it's like literally, dude, it will blow your mind. Like doodles. Like there's this doodles thing. It's just basically
one that's just lines.
Squiggly lines. And it would be like Watson took a marker and drew a J-shaped Nike swoosh or something like that. And then somehow that was valuable. I've also seen a lot. So I'm currently, I dove into this. So I'm currently waiting for a lucky duck to hatch. So I minted a lucky duck, which is, okay. So this is an image of a claymation duck. So what are the artists and people doing with this? Their goal with Lucky Ducks is it's a well-known claymation artist who wants to basically get the capital together to create an animated claymation series. And in order to do that, needs more people, needs more focus, needs all of that. And they literally said, okay, this is what we're doing with the money. And we're going to hire more people. We're going to pitch this. So here's the thing. So if those lucky ducks, if that becomes like, okay, Matt, what do your kids watch on TV? There's like Blippi and Ryan the Toy Kid and all of that stuff. So now let's just say lucky ducks becomes a big thing. There might be some real value to that, especially if you had one of the characters that ended up being important. Now, who knows? Is that going to happen or is it not? So those are literally just pictures of, and I watched a video on it and they like had all these different attributes. So they're switching them around and like, they just kind of make them all look different.
Well, and that's one of the things you're seeing you're definitely seeing in this. You see artists that create different NFT collections that end up being popular, like the Bored Ape Yacht Club, that eventually turn into a much bigger thing or brand, right?
And I think like Doodle, you mentioned Doodles earlier. Like that's another one I think is really cool. That's not the squiggly line one. The squiggly line one has to be called something else. But the Doodles actually I think are really cool little ones. They're like a very unique style of characters. And, you know, if that turns into like a kid's TV show one day, like, you know, like the point is they're like building brands behind like these, this art that becomes common and people are familiar with it. So then they're able to take that and then make something else out of it. Kind of like how Angry Birds ended up being a movie and, you know, all that kind of stuff, right? Like Mickey Mouse is everywhere. Like it's the same sort of thing.
So with that, there's a lot of people that, you know, a lot of people are into artists, their work, their creations and stuff like that. And then, but you can go out and buy a lot of stuff, but it's not, that money isn't going back and supporting the artist. It's stolen.
So yes and no, right? So the way that people make money with NFTs is when they're minted. So if I'm the artist and I create a collection of 10,000 or whatever, and I charge, you know, one Ethereum to have a minted or whatever, then I'm going to make one Ethereum from the minting of them, right? That's it. But and then if later it gets sold for a bunch of money, I don't necessarily get that. Now, you can program into the smart contracts so they get like a small percentage of it, like they may get 5% or something. So if that dude's, the dude with the shoes, I saw one that was, I swear it said 2,000 Ethereum. So it was like, however much that is, was that $1.2 million or something? I don't know. It was a lot of money.
Totally worth it, right?
Well, whatever, it was a lot of money. So if he gets 5% every time that gets sold, like, hey, he's doing all right. But from what I've heard from people that are kind of in this business, they said usually the artists are making the money off the minting. Because just think, if you made $75 off everyone that's minted, you mint 10,000 of them, that's 750 grand. Now you can pray and hope that the collection becomes worth more later and you get some of the fees and the secondary market later on OpenSea and stuff like that. But 750 grand off some JPEGs off the first minting, like, hey, that's pretty damn good.
Yeah. And so, as I mentioned earlier, what the hope is for a lot of people is that, well, so a lot of the NFT art, so one of the things is, as I've been begin to explore this whole space, and I'm not going to shoot it any other way than how I saw it. So I was not an NFT expert. I know some people that certainly are. And you know, what was Travis Wright's podcast again?
Nifty. It's called the Nifty.
So Travis, Travis is a Kansas City resident and the host of the Bad Crypto podcast. And someone that advised me about a year and a half ago to start buying NFTs, which is advice I really wish I had taken. But you know, you'll see what I found here was exactly like Matt described, which first off was creator friendly marketplace. It is not difficult to create an NFT and list it for sale at a place like OpenSea.
That doesn't mean anybody knows it exists or they give a shit.
I mean, but it's dude, you could literally go there right now and upload a JPEG or a PNG and you could put it up for sale.
Okay? And then
anyone's going to be interested in it. So what a lot of people hope with here is with NFT art is they're looking for scarcity. So that's one thing. They're looking for brand recognition. So you get an artist like Beeple, who's already like world famous. And that's the thing. You own like a one of one. And now the downside of that is, Matt, you could drag and drop that image right out of any browser and put it up wherever you wanted. Now, that doesn't mean you're the owner of it.
Let's talk about that for a minute. Think about the Mona Lisa for an example, right? Like I wouldn't pay millions of dollars for the Mona Lisa. It ain't worth nothing to me, but people think it's worth millions of dollars, right? And it's in an art gallery somewhere. I can go take a picture of the Mona Lisa and I could go to Walmart and probably print it out for like a few bucks, right? And I have a picture of the Mona Lisa. Is that the same thing or is it different? It's not the same thing. It's not the original, right? And when you talk about JPEGs as art, it's the same thing. Like, yeah, I can make my Twitter avatar is a Bored Ape, but I don't own the original Bored Ape. I have a copy of it, just like I went to the Mona Lisa and I took a picture of the Mona Lisa and printed it. It's the same thing, right? I don't own the original and I can't prove that I own the original. Nobody wants to buy my copy. My copy ain't worth shit. They want to buy the original, right? And so, if you think about it that way, like with the Mona Lisa, it's the same sort of thing. Like people want to own the original and say that they own the original. Now, what I don't understand about digital art is what the hell you do with it.
Right.
So it's like, why would I buy this thing? What do I do with it? I can't hang it in my house.
I, I can give you a little bit of insight on that because, you know, you're going to start, Twitter led the charge. So if you're subscribed to Twitter Blue, which is like $2 a month, it's kind of like gives you access to all the beta stuff. So you can actually connect your NFTs to your Twitter profile, like your avatar.
Yeah.
So right now, if you go to @DeCourcyMatt, you'll see I've been doing that for the last month on
but
my
mine's
Twitter
already
profile.
A Bored Ape. My Twitter handle is
right, but here's the thing. But I can go to your Twitter profile.
Yeah.
And thanks for finally following me, by the way.
So what you're saying is it's a status symbol.
Yeah, it is. But I immediately know that your Twitter profile. You need a header, bro.
So Can I use
Canva to make you a Twitter header?
So what you're saying is you went to my Twitter account and you can tell I'm a broke ass dude because I got the copy of the Bored Ape. Where if I had a little hexagon around there, I would be a rich ass dude.
Yeah, because you're so on my Twitter profile, you can click, you can literally click my image and it will tell you. So first off, mine's an octagon, not a circle.
Okay.
And I had to connect the digital token. So Twitter's verifying that I'm at least the wallet that's in my wallet. So in this particular case, you would be able to click it. And now it can say it's out of the Grandpa Ape collection. It says there's 10,000. It gives you some other information about him. It tells you that my guy, he's wearing a stunt jacket. He has dark brown fur.
He's pretty cool.
He has 3D glasses on. He's okay. He's bored and unshaven, smoking a cigar.
So basically what we're saying is like, I have a fake Louis Vuitton purse.
Yes.
You have like a Coach purse. You can't afford the Louis Vuitton either. But then the guy who actually has the Bored Ape has got like the Louis Vuitton purse. Like, is that what we're saying, basically?
I'm saying
it's like all status symbols, right?
I'm wondering why your Rolex is the second hand is ticking and not sweeping.
Yeah. It's to me, it's like they become like status symbols of saying like, oh, I own a Bored Ape or whatever.
And dude, that's all art is. That's all art is. Because the original paintings that I own are at a level of quality that could be sold for 10, 20, 100 times more. But with that, it's the artist's notoriety that drives that multiple. It's kind of like startups, you know, it's like there are a variety of factors and, you know, and that's, I want to talk about some of that a little bit more, but hang on, Matt, give me 1 second. Cause there's something I need to remind you of. And it's that today's episode of Startup Hustle is brought to you by Canva. With Canva, you can design your ideas with ease. You can get inspired. They have 500,000 free templates, and they have a whole rich content library that helps you and your team achieve your goals. Sign up and start designing for free at canva.com. There's a link for that in the show notes. So you could go create anything you wanted at Canva, including a new Twitter header for Matt's Twitter account.
Yes, please.
And you could do that in minutes and have it ready. The thing I like about Canva, dude, is like everything it's templated, but it doesn't need to be. So you got a whole lot of templates you can work with. But one of the goofy things about creating images just for the internet is that every place you use them seems to want a different size. So like the size you need, the layout you need, the design you need for your Twitter header is going to be different than your LinkedIn header, which is going to be different than your Facebook header. And then you're like, come on. But anyway, they make that really easy. And yeah, you can sign up for free. So
Canva is awesome, man. I definitely have used it a bunch of times. So I don't know, man. I was going to ask you, you're an art collector. So I am not an art collector. My question for you though.
Well, yeah, you are. You actually have some art. You have
a little bit. Yeah. Not as much as you. So my question for you is, what is the most amount of money? And you don't have to answer this question if you want. What is the most amount of money you've ever spent on a single piece of art? Like real world art. And if you don't want to answer the question, that's cool.
No, and I don't mind answering it because here's the thing. As I'm buying it wholesale.
Yeah.
Right. So like is the question, $2,000.
Okay.
For a painting. Yeah.
So I'm not an art.
And I mean, $1,500 to $2,000, but then I've done that about 40 times.
Yeah.
So, but with that, I have a whole collection of it. And now what are those paintings worth? Like I said, I'm buying them without the gallery involved. So when you go to buy a painting at a gallery, the gallery takes half the money.
Yeah.
So, yeah. So with that, if you know the artist and you can get directly to the artist, you can basically buy it for half. So all that stuff. Now, what's it worth? Dude, just like my dad used to tell me, because I'd come, when I was a small child, I'd be like, I have this Mark McGwire rookie card and it's worth $10. And he'd say, do you have someone to give you $10 for it? And I said, no. And he said, well, what about the baseball card store? I said, well, they'll give me five.
Yeah.
Okay. Then it's only worth $5.
It's worth five. So I have bought a few different pieces of art in my house, and most of them were probably about the same kind of price range that you just mentioned, right? I do have one crown jewel that I bought from a local artist named Jeff Hansen, who has since passed away. But I absolutely have always loved his art, and I was a totally huge fan. It's Kansas City guy. Do you know who I'm talking about?
Yeah.
And so honestly, I paid, I don't remember exactly how much it was. It was like $10,000 to $15,000 for this piece of art. It was like the biggest art splurge I've ever done. To me, that was a crazy, crazy deal. But I was a huge fan of his art, always wanted a piece of his art. And he just had the most amazing piece that, like, the second I saw it on his website, I'm like, oh my God, I have to have this thing. It is amazing. So I bought it and it's in my front room and it's one of my favorite things. I walk by it every day. And every time I see it, I'm like, oh my God, this thing's beautiful.
Yeah. And that's how I feel about the art.
With digital art, because the same thing, like, I could save a JPEG of anything and put it on a 80-inch TV in the other room and look at those pictures, and I didn't pay for any of them, right? I don't know. Like, it's the same thing. I make a copy of the Mona Lisa picture, and I could digitally put it in my room in there, right? But I don't own it. So it's just interesting to me, like, the whole digital art thing. But
yeah, I agree. And you know, here's the thing is there's a lot of flaws in it for, like, mainly what you just mentioned. Now, at the same time, it also fixes a hell of a lot of flaws that have gone on overall in the collectibles and authenticity market. So, you know, that's the thing that's been a real challenge is, so, and I talked about this in the WTF as an NFT episode, but there, you know, over the last, you know, 15 years, there's been this developing story. So Leonardo da Vinci had a painting that was called the Salvator Mundi, which was reportedly painted around 1500. And it's kind of like, it's a painting of Jesus. And he's just like straight on. It's kind of funny. It kind of looks like the same face as the Mona Lisa on a lot of them. But this painting was missing forever. And then it supposedly surfaced somewhere in New Orleans. Someone bought it in terrible condition for a couple grand, had a world renowned restoration artist work on it, who along the way said, oh my God, this is a Da Vinci. Now, that said, when that went out and got sold, it sold for over like 80 to 100 million bucks. And then later someone bought it for 400 million. The problem is forever in the history and future of this painting, will the trail of ownership will always be questioned. And so a lot of people don't think that it is what it is. A lot of people think that it could be, but there's no real way to prove it. Now, I personally think that when someone paid $450 million for it, you proved everything you needed to prove, right? So, but with blockchain and NFT art, you can prove it. Like, you literally, it would be impossible to erase the trail, now, assuming that it was on a blockchain that was owned by more.
Are you ready for me to drop the bombshell that you don't want to hear?
Oh, no.
When you buy an NFT, like a Bored Ape or whatever, and you buy it for $1 million, it's not actually stored on the blockchain. No. What you're buying is an Ethereum token that basically has a website address, basically like a URL to a file that's hosted somewhere else. So literally you're buying a token, a thing, like just a magical token, right? It's like a unique identifier that just points to the file that's actually saved somewhere else. And a lot of times that file could be on like Google Cloud or Dropbox or whatever. It could be anywhere. And actually, if somebody could go to Google Cloud and just delete that file or change the file, then it's just gone, which is crazy, huh? So what most of the projects do, though, is they're using what's called the interplanetary file system, or they are saving it in a different blockchain. So like Ethereum is not the place you would want to store like this 100K you know, JPEG, like this giant JPEG file. Like, you couldn't store it in Ethereum. That wouldn't make any sense. But you can store it on the interplanetary file system, which the file can never be deleted. So like if you put the file there, the file is there in perpetuity on that blockchain. Now, if that blockchain disappears someday, then I guess we're all screwed. But that's the reality of it too, actually, is the files are stored somewhere else. But the so good
do
thing,
I need to, I, do I need to move my grandpa ape over to
you might
guarantee
you might want to
that
save
it's...
a backup of it, I guess. I don't know. But
it's in my
somebody,
digital wallet.
But somebody could go, my point is, like, if there's 10,000 of those in like Google Drive somewhere, somebody could go like rename the files and magically your grandpa ape is like a different one.
Oh man.
Isn't that crazy? So that's
yeah,
why people
I'm
using
here, I'm furiously trying to sell all my NFT art now.
That's why people use these other file systems so that they're like more immutable so nobody can like delete the files. Yeah. But some of them,
That's crazy. So,
but
I
by
mean,
the
so,
way, by the way, you remember you did the rubber duck party thing? That's how that worked. Yeah. That's why it showed like a weird like opening soon, like you know, like you're gonna get a random duck thing. So if anybody buys any of these NFTs and you see these images of like, oh, you're gonna you know unveil what you really got, that's what it does. It's actually changing the photo behind the scenes, as I just described.
So let's talk a little bit about, so this is an interesting thing. I got a list of some historical transactions that have occurred, you know, with, so first off, 50% of all NFT sales, this isn't just art, are for less than $200 a transaction, right?
That makes
so
sense.
For the most part, they're pretty, and this is back from the other episode. So I think this number's low, so I'm questioning this, but according to Statista, 23% of people that collect NFTs are millennials. I would think that would be like 83%.
Yeah.
So I'm questioning that. There was $41 billion worth of transactions via crypto that occurred in NFT marketplaces. Now, some of the most expensive NFTs, so there was one that sold called The Merge, which sold for $91.8 million. And that's a single artwork composed of a collection of masses that that users created by anonymous digital artists named Pack, P-A-K. So that ended up being fractionalized into 312,000 different pieces that are owned by approximately 29,000 buyers. So that's kind of an interesting concept. In that case, they took a single thing and they chopped it up 300,000 times. So you became a fractional owner of a very well-known piece of art. Another one called The First 5,000 Days, which I mentioned earlier, was sold. The artist is known as Beeple, $69 million. Beeple had another one. Beeple's killing it, by the way. So he had another one called Human One that sold for $29.98 million. And then you get into things like Matt was mentioning earlier, like CryptoPunks, which, okay, this is what I find to be so fascinating. If you have ever seen a picture of a CryptoPunk, it reminds me of something that I drew on an Apple IIe in like 1985.
Yeah, it's very pixelated.
It's just pixel and there. I mean, this is like, it's almost kind of like throwing a middle finger up at art. Like it's not, I mean, if I, Matt, if I drew that for you during a meeting and handed it to you, you would probably put your coffee cup on top of it because that's how much it would have seemed. But you had one, there was called the COVID Alien, which sold for $11.75 million. There was another one for 7.5. I mean, there's been other ones. So Snoop Dogg bought one called X Copy for $7 million. Beeple had another one that was an animated video featuring former U.S. President Donald Trump laying on a field while bystanders ignored him. He got $6.6 million for that.
That's
and
great.
I mean, it just goes on and on and on. So where are people? So people are making these transactions in NFT marketplaces that are really on fire right now. And some of the most well-known is OpenSea, which is kind of like StubHub. That's where secondary, it's all secondary. It's not primary.
Yes.
Meaning when we say primary would be like, if you go buy your concert ticket at the box office or directly from Ticketmaster, it becomes secondary if you choose to resell it or buy it from someone else that's reselling.
Right.
But that's where artists are benefiting from it because a lot of them are minting or pushing these collections through these marketplaces. So they get a piece of secondary transactions as well. So OpenSea, Rarible, and there's another one called Foundation. So I've seen OpenSea and Rarible at a lot. I think there's another one. Is it Gemini?
There's another one. I think it's called like Looks Rare. So one of the
biggest problems
with all these marketplaces, there's two problems. The first one is OpenSea would tell you, I think it's like 80 or 90% of everything that gets listed on there is basically a scam, a fake, a ripoff, or whatever, right? So you can take
They tell you to be cautious. I don't want to say that that's our opinion on it.
That's their statistics. Yeah. Like they would tell you. So they I mean, just like they have moderators on TikTok and all those other things to weed out like crap we're not supposed to see, right? You know, they have a bunch of moderators that have to go through all the shit that gets put on there every day and figure out, oh, nope, it's just somebody uploading a copy of the Bored Yacht, you know, Yacht Club again. Or it's the same, it's the Bored Apes, but they flip the images and turn them upside down, but it's the same thing. Like, people do that shit all day long. So there's all this scam, this like crap out there because it's an open marketplace. You have other marketplaces like Looks Rare and some of them that only do highly coveted known stuff. It's not an open marketplace. You and I can't just go list something on there. Now, like Beeple could or something, but like not just like two schmoes like us.
I want to reveal something. I am actually Beeple and I'm also Banksy. I'm Banksy.
That explains
as well.
That explains a lot.
Why I'm just randomly gone to places that then just have really well-known graffiti art. So let's talk about that for a second. You know Banksy. Do you know who Banksy is?
I don't know a lot about him. I mean, I think I mostly learned about him probably like a lot of people when he shredded his art after he sold it.
Yes. Oh, I love that. So Banksy is like shows up in town. So he's anonymous, although a lot of people believe that they know who he is. And I believe they proved it, but I'm going to let people research that on their own. But you know, Banksy does these really crazy and like kind of statement based graffiti in town, like literally like painting on a brick wall. And because he's so well known and because they were so well hyped, you know, what happens is when Banksy shows up in a town, people show up and they'll like cut the wall out of a building.
Oh, wow.
Right. To then go try to sell it for like a ton of money. Now, the problem is if you're Banksy, you don't get anything out of that. Right. Like someone else is. So, you know, this kind of stuff I think is good for the art community. Hey, man, if you can get it. Right. Now, at the same time, Matt's right. I see a lot. So my Twitter profile is a grandpa ape. That is not a Bored Ape. Right. It's not the same company. It's not the same people. And honestly,
and that's not a scam. Meant no regards that was a scam.
No, it's different. Well, it's different, but it's close, right? Yeah. Now, personally, I think it's actually a better picture than the Bored Ape, not a Bored Ape. Yeah, it's not a Bored Ape. So, you know, and where did I come across that? I was just doing research for this series and I wanted to see what's up. And I'm not about to drop 5 or 6 digits on a Bored or Mutant Ape. No. Although, that might not have been the worst decision given the ape coin launch that came out from that. Cause you could have bought a $200,000 Bored Ape, like the cheapest one they had. And you would have ended up getting about 190 to 100 grand of ape coin after it. So some of this stuff, it's going to be interesting where the sustainability exists in the art community. And cause the thing is once you release something, they don't water down their own stuff, or at least good artists don't, cause there's gotta be a little trust in the community. I mean, Bored Ape is a brand now. I mean, they actually just took in $450 million of investment at a $4 billion valuation. So someone's
from
doing
like
something right.
Andreessen Horowitz or somebody, right? It was somebody big.
A ton of them, man. A bunch of them. Who, by the way, also took ownership of a hell of a lot of ape coin.
So do you think that digital art is art? Like, you're an art collector. How do you feel about it?
I do. I think it's art because if you want to leave it at that basic of a question, yeah. Because I mean, I think you can call a lot of things art. Do I understand the trade of NFT art? Yeah, I get a lot of it, especially the things like. So I'm a one of one guy. Like I own roughly 40 original paintings. All one of one, very much one of one. I can prove one of one. I own about 8 to 10 different high level sports collectibles. Like I own a Royals jersey that, you know, one of the Royals players was wearing when he put us into the World Series that we won. And that was as high of, I couldn't actually buy a World Series jersey. So I bought that. It was auctioned off from the club. You asked me earlier how much I'd spent on art. I actually spent almost $3,000 on that jersey. But it's the only one of one. And I'm a huge Royals fan. It's like one of my prized possessions that I just love to like have around me, because I like things that are going with winning. I mean, honestly, I'm actually, I'm in discussion right now to purchase a guitar from a rock star.
Okay.
You know, it's like some of that. So, but that's a one of one thing too. So mm-hmm. like I get it on the one of one stuff. I think that there's, this is getting watered down in a hurry. I mean, it, there to me, are it's a lot of so speculation. Many. Yeah.
I mean, so I can see investing in like CryptoPunks or Bored Apes or something, thinking like, okay, 20 years from now, are these still going to be worth a lot of money? Will they continue to be Maybe. Worth more money?
But those Maybe. Are blue I chips. Mean, probably, those are right? like They're blue the, chip things, right? At this yeah. point.
And, but people are, what they're chasing is like, what will be the next that, like the grandpa ape that you have, or the rubber duck party or whatever. Like, is a rubber duck party going to be like a blue chip collectible? Probably not, right? Like, but nope. people speculate on that, and what you have is a lot of people that do what you call flipping them, right? Like, you bought the rubber duck party, and maybe you got like the most coolest rubber duck, and then you bought it for $100, and maybe you can sell it for $500 3 weeks from now, right? And it's like, hey, I made some money, cool, I flipped it. But then I think there might be people that, like, more like me, like I would consider maybe investing in a blue chip one. Like, okay, maybe I'll buy a CryptoPunk. Like, you know, I'll put a few dollars in it, and like, I'm never going to think about it again for like 10 years. Like, that's the only way I could do it. Cause there's no way I could convince myself, honestly, to go buy a rubber duck. Like, I just couldn't do it.
So you talk about, I think that at certain points, I think things like Bored Ape, I don't know if they'll, I don't know where the pricing's going to be or stay. I think that one's there that, so I think a lot of this stuff's going to get looked back at as a form of nostalgia.
Yes.
You know, like some of the things, it was like, you look at like, so with baseball cards, like the 1952 Mickey Mantle rookie card.
Yeah.
Now, Mickey Mantle was not the best baseball player in the history of baseball, but there was a level of scarcity and marketability that just happened to all come together there. Like, there weren't so many of them that, you know, that it was still very rare. It's also like a New York and a Yankees thing. So you take the most popular franchise and you take one of the most popular players that went mm-hmm. with it. So now when I was a kid, you could have bought one of those for like $5,000, which seems extreme. Now that might be like a $1 million baseball card. Now, on the flip side of that, a lot of people that were my age went through like the 80s where there was no scarcity. So baseball cards for the longest time, they just printed, like you could go to Sam's Club, and they would have an entire pallet filled with boxes of cards in the little wax packs with the gum in it, right? Now, there's no value to almost all of that because there's a million Mark McGwire rookie cards that are all yeah. exactly the same. So the collectibles yeah. industries has changed through this. Now, you know, another thing that's like this could and will probably disrupt is, so there's a huge business around authentication.
Yes.
Baseball cards, yep. autographs, like all of that. And this, so if you bought that, the Beeple for $70 million, you don't have any need to authenticate that. It's authenticated.
You got your private key, you can prove you're the owner.
Yeah. And that's what people are into. So I, you know, and then to kind of answer your question, I thought about this lately because I was like, would I just buy a Bored Ape? I mean, I'll be honest with you, I wish I had. Cause if I would have known that a $200,000 Bored Ape was going to come back and dish out $100,000 worth of ape coin, which I could have immediately sold on Coinbase. That would have been one thing. Now here's the thing is I even watched it. I said, okay, well, if that's the case and everyone's cashed that in, those should probably be worth a lot less now. They aren't.
Not yet.
Could have made some money there.
Yeah.
You know, I have a friend that owns a whole bunch of mutant apes. So when the mutant apes came, you could buy those things for $300 and they didn't even sell out quickly, which is yep. wild if you think about it. Like, cause it, and you know, sometimes that kind of stuff does kind of slowly creep up, you know,
well,
it's the stuff that
with any kind of market, right? It takes buyers and sellers. And let's be honest, if there's only a maximum of 10,000 people that have a mutant ape and none of them want to sell, none of them want to sell, right? But you got people that want to buy, the price is going to go up.
Yeah.
It's scarcity.
Yeah. Well, then another thing that's the kind of the hidden element of this is all of this, so much of this exists on the Ethereum blockchain. So if I buy Mapcoin or I buy a JPEG of Watson for one Ethereum, and today Ethereum's at $3,000, That when Ethereum's worth $5,000, it's still originally purchased for one Ethereum. So there's a fluctuating value, because that's also what you're going to exchange it back for. So there's a whole dynamic that comes into that. But I mean, overall, man, I mean, hats off to the artist community, because yes, if y'all are ready to buy it and pay for it, you know, you're a willing buyer. No one's twisting your arm, and no one's forcing anybody to buy a Bored Ape.
Well, I would say that there are probably way more artists that have made way more money selling NFTs than there are artists that made money selling like real paintings and stuff in real life. I bet.
Yeah.
Like, just because it's so hard to sell real paintings. Like the amount of work it takes to make those paintings on your wall behind you that nobody can see, it takes many hours, right? And so, yeah, you would buy them for a couple $1,000, $4,000. And honestly, the artist probably doesn't make that much profit off of them because the amount of work they put into them, right? But now all of a sudden, if they can make these NFT collections and they blow up and they, you know, sell for hundreds of thousands of dollars, like, that's going to far surpass what most of these people would have done in these paintings, I would think. But
well, and as we kind of wrap up, once again, I want to give a big thank you to today's sponsor. That's Canva. Go to canva.com. There's a link in the show notes. Canva can, you could go to Canva right now and make an image and upload it as an NFT, or you could create concepts or do a whole lot of different stuff. But, you know, get on the same page with your team as well, and you can have seamless real-time collaboration. So, I mean, question is, what are you going to design today? You can explore and start designing for free at canva.com. So, yeah, you know, well, Matt, would you buy? So you'd never buy a Bored Ape?
If I was going to buy one, it might be one of those. I mean, what's crazy is there's a huge universe of NFTs. Like, I joked one day, I told you I randomly saw one on OpenSea or whatever. I think I found it on Twitter. It was like Pimps and Hoes NFT. Like, it was like, there was like so much crazy shit out there. Like the one of just the squiggly lines, like that one blows my mind. It's like, why would people buy squiggly lines? There's so like the JPEG arts of like everything you can imagine out there. Like, it's just crazy. So
the cheapest that you can buy a Bored Ape for right now at the time of this recording is on OpenSea, and it's $319,000 or 103 Ethereum. Okay, so now here's the crazy thing: is before they issued ApeCoin, so this has actually gone up significantly, despite the fact that the people that own these have already harvested those coins.
By the way, did you hear about the people who borrowed Bored Apes, got the ApeCoin, and then returned them?
Yeah.
There was some dude that made like $1 million.
All in one smooth transaction. Yeah. Hey, we got to respect the hustle a little bit.
Some guy made like $1 million doing that.
Yeah. And there's, you know, we're going to get into some of that later in the series. There is a dark side to some of this that has a lot of people questioning what's going on and how it's occurring. And, you know, one of the things with the blockchain that there is a level of anonymity that leads to a lot of things coming out, and the founders or those behind it aren't what is known as doxed. What does doxed mean, Matt?
I mean, basically, it means that they've been identified, right? You talk about something like Banksy and figuring out who Banksy really is. That would refer to him being doxed. I don't remember. I don't know what doxed is, like a acronym or.
It's D-O-X-X-E-D. I mean, that's how I've seen it written. But that would be, in some cases, it would be like, hey, here's the creators. Here's the founders. These are real people. This isn't bullshit. This isn't a scam. Right. So they're trying to lend their own credibility for it. So like one of the things you're seeing a lot with the NFT that stuff that comes out is like, you know, like actual brands getting behind it. But in some cases, it's honestly even hard to figure that out. Now, we were mentioning as we kind of wrap up, one of the things on OpenSea, you know, with their moderators is the blue check mark.
Yes.
So you and that's a big thing.
Staying away from the junk.
And so that's them kind of authenticating it. So like I'm looking at it right now and I see Bored Ape Yacht Club, Mutant Ape Yacht Club, Azuki. These are some of the top ones. You know, there's the CryptoPunks, and these all have blue checks next to them. So I don't know. I think this is a really interesting thing. And by the way, you get other things too that don't have the blue check, like for example, Bape. So you're talking about apes. So Bape is a Japanese clothing brand that talks about a bathing ape. Right. So they just launched their own NFT, which was technically an art NFT. They haven't hatched yet or been revealed, as we like to say, but those sold out the same day they came up. Right. So right now, the cheapest one, man, I probably should have bought these when they were cheaper.
Over one Ethereum.
Yeah, yeah. So the other day when I was looking at these, when they came out, they were at like 0.6, 0.7. So in some of these cases, now here's the thing, is they minted straight from Bape for way less than that. So people are turning around and flipping a lot of this stuff. And, you know, I mean, I was talking to the COO at Fullscale about this, because this reminds me a lot of when we were ticket brokers.
Yeah. And it's some of it's speculation, right? It's speculation.
It is
all,
it is. And then some of it's kind of predictable though. Like, yes. And now I'm a little surprised on this one, seeing this floor being at 1.5 Ethereum. That is actually double of what it was a couple days ago.
I mean, back, you know, example, back to your ticketing days, it's like Super Bowl tickets. You're like, yeah, we know people are going to like these, but depending on who plays in the game and what, you know, what city it's in, it's going to be more or less or whatever. Right. Like some of these you can see, okay, it's Bape, you know, that's a big brand that's attached to this. Like, odds are this is probably going to do pretty good, right? But then you have other ones, you're like totally unknowns. Who knows what the hell this shit is? Like, I don't want to mess with it. But some of them, they're
no one knew what a Bored Ape was.
Not originally. Yeah, not originally.
A year and a half ago. Yeah.
But something, I mean, like Bape.
Theoretically, if you bought those when they came out, if you had bought those when they were $1,000 a piece, right, and you bought 10 of them for 10 grand, you'd have at least $2.5 million after all the fees of selling them, and likely probably a lot more.
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of like the dude that wasn't the first Bitcoin transaction, like 10,000 Bitcoins for a pizza.
I think it was a few Bitcoin. Yeah. Yes.
I mean, it was like 10,000. It was a lot. It was like, I mean, they were like a nickel a coin at that point. Something crazy. And that guy has speaking of doxed, he's been pretty outed all over the internet for doing that. So anyway, man, that's what I found out about NFT art. I mean, it's clearly there's something to this. $41 billion worth of transactions in the entire NFT exchanges, but most of that is technically under the art or collectibles.
Yeah. That's what gets all the hype right now, is the NFT art.
Yeah. Well, stay tuned. We'll be back next week for another edition of our series about NFTs. See you then, Matt.
All right. See you then.
Startup Hustle's brought to you by Fullscale.io, helping you build a software team quickly and affordably. Make sure you reach down and hit that subscribe button, then come find us on Instagram. See you next time. We do it.